This meeting is now being recorded.
Well, welcome everyone. Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening, and welcome to the RPM Subteam for Sunrise Data Review call on the 30th of January, 2019. In the interest of time today, there will be no roll call. Attendance will be taken via the Adobe Connect room. So if you have been only on the audio bridge today, would you please let yourself know now? All right, thank you. Hearing no names, I would like to remind everyone to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes, and please keep your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking to avoid any background noise. With this, I will turn the meeting over to David McCauley. Please begin.
Actually, this is Julie Hedlund from staff. Michelle, I'm sorry. I'll go ahead and at least take us through the agenda and get things teed up for David. Just a review of the agenda. We start with the statements of interest. We'll have a brief discussion, then move on to the discussion of the comments, if any, from the questions that were remaining from last week, but which there should be no new comments as those were closed off last week. To the heart of today's meeting, which is the analysis of previously collected data, and staff will lead that off with some background on the data sources and also a description of the tool as well. And may I ask if there is any other business? George Kirkos, please.
George Kirkos, for the transcript. This is probably a repeat from the other subteam call, but there's that document that's due for review by Thursday, which seems to be a very short amount of time. It took staff 5 days to prepare. It's unreasonable to expect everybody to drop everything and review that document in just 2 days. So it would be nice to at least have the weekend to review that. And the other elephant in the room is the amount of workload that was assigned last week. And we've kind of beaten it to death in the other subteam, but if people that weren't on that call, they might want to listen to that call because you can't just assign dozens of hours worth of work to volunteers and expect it to be done. And as you can see from the documents that Ariel sent earlier today, nobody did the revised homework at all. So we should talk about the workload at some point. Thank you.
Thank you, George. Then let me go back to the top of the agenda and ask if there are any updates to statements of interest. Not seeing any hands raised. Then let me go to item two, and I ask here, David, would you like staff to proceed to do a little brief overview of the data sources and the tool for the reviewing of the previously collected data.
I'm Julie, thanks.
Go ahead, David. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right. Thanks for that question. And I had expected to insert, and thanks to George for the questions, but to insert something on the workflow. And I do expect Kathy is going to call in. In fact, I heard a call just click in. So if there's anyone that's now on the line that's not Adobe, would they please identify themselves? Okay, hearing none, I had expected to go to a little a brief workflow discussion as a second item after the admin and SOI, but what I'd like to do, Julie, is take you up on your offer of giving some brief information on the previously collected data, and then if Kathy has called in by that time, we'll ask her to talk about workflow briefly. So why don't you go ahead, Julie?
Thank you very much, David. And actually, I'm going to turn to my colleague, Mary Wong, to give us a short few words on the data sources. And actually, I did not see Mary. It looks like Mary is just joining. While Mary is joining, let me instead turn to my colleague, Ariel Leong. Now I see Mary's microphone is coming up. So, Mary, please go ahead. Pardon me. Mary, if you're speaking,
no worries, Julie. Hi, everybody.
Sorry, Mary.
Yes, no, I'm speaking. I suddenly realized that I was on the call, but I had not turned on my microphone. So just to take a couple minutes of everyone's time, and it really is just a refresher or reminder of where those documents that the group was asked to review came from. And essentially, we're talking about quite a lot of data and previous information, but the two big documents would be the inter-cost impact survey and the review of the trademark clearinghouse that was carried out by the analysis group. Before I describe each of these two briefly, staff thinks it's important for everyone to remember that whether we're talking about these two documents or some of the other information that came into our working group, that most, if not all of these, were either responses to specific questions that the working group had at the time, or were, like the analysis group report, like the inter-cost impact survey, not responses to questions or specific investigations carried out by this PDP. So while the hope is that many, if not all, of these sources will provide, first of all, useful information, and second of all, provide useful information that we can see is relevant to helping us answer the agreed charter questions, staff still thinks it's important to note that where they came from, in some cases, was separate work from this PDP. And so in going through this document, you may find that some of them, may not seem to you to be directly relevant to the agreed charter questions, or may not have very clear information to yield in answering those questions. This is one of the reasons why. And in relation to the analysis group's report on the trademark clearinghouse, as well as the inter-cost impact survey, these documents had been shared previously with the full working group. For the analysis group report, this was published in early 2017, and you may recall that the working group did meet with the analysis group to discuss aspects of that report. The working group had the opportunity to ask quite specific questions and send some follow-up to the analysis group, and they provided some answers around mid-2017. In August 2017, Lori Shulman of Inter presented the results of the Inter Cost Impact Survey to the working group, and again, our working group had the chance to interact with Lori and ask some questions. The Inter survey was carried out amongst all of Inter's members, and it was focused on the cost, potential cost, actual cost to trademark owners of the RPMs. And of course, the analysis group's review focused on the working of the trademark clearinghouse. They did have access to data and information provided by the trademark clearinghouse validator, which is Deloitte, as well as the provider and the maintainer of the trademark database, which is IBM. This particular exercise that was done by the analysis group before the analysis group was contracted to conduct the more recent surveys for our PDP came out of an initial request to ICANN or from the Governmental Advisory Committee, and that's why the date of that review was early 2017. So that's really, in a nutshell, where those documents came from, how they originated, and when our working group had the opportunity to first review them. And so, Julie, on that note, I think it's best ended if I hand over to you or Ariel to then describe how that was translated into use for the subteam.
Thank you very much, Mary. This is Julie again from staff. And let me now turn to Ariel for a description of the spreadsheet and how staff reviewed the data and filled out the spreadsheet.
Thanks very much, Julie and Mary. This is Ariel from staff. Just a very quick overview how long it took staff to develop the spreadsheet. It took us about 3 business days to review all the source documents that are listed on the first tab of the spreadsheet and then plug in the relevant information we saw in the documents and match against the charter questions for both trademark claims and summarize. That's about the time staff spent developing the spreadsheet. So as you have seen, the first tab lists all the source documents that the sub-team should review and the download link. And then the second and third tabs is basically excerpts and quotes from the documents that staff identified, and then we think some information or data in the document may be helpful in answering the charter question. So we basically copy-paste the paragraphs or sentences into the spreadsheet and also indicate which page or slide number this information comes from in case you want to check the source itself. And because it's a lot of text and things overwhelming, we try to summarize the information in the column B, the staff summary column, just to help you speed up the review. But as my other colleagues mentioned earlier too, that this is not a staff's attempt to capture all the information. We just try to facilitate your review, and the sub-team should review the documents yourself and identify relevant information and be helpful in answering the charter questions. That's it for this overview of the tool. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ariel. David, unless there are any questions, we'll go ahead and turn things back to you to continue. Thank you.
Thank you, Julie. Thanks, Ariel, and thanks, Mary. I had been in touch with Kathy Kleiman prior to the call, and as members of this group have probably, I'm certain, have seen some correspondence from Kathy on behalf of the co-chairs of the full working group regarding the work process. And while we have a big agenda today with many questions, I think it would be appropriate to go over that. I understand that's what happened on the trademark claims call just prior to this call, but there are some members of this call, this group, that are not members of that, including myself, and it's not a perfect coverage. So I was hoping that Kathy would speak to this. She is not on the call at this time. I have spoken briefly with Phil, and I think he would be willing to make some comments about it. So, Phil, if you could address it, it would be helpful to the folks on this call, I believe.
Yeah. Excuse me. Sorry about that. Sure, David. This is just an updated version of the proposed process, which we're following as of now. Updated as of Monday, the 28th, and published for information of full working group and sub-team members. The main changes are the Section 5, which addresses additional data. This is not a new homework assignment. This is simply that if a request for crowdsourcing, if any members of this sub-team of the full working group are aware of any domain sector publication, trademark publication, any other source of data that is in addition to data we've already received that you think is credible and relevant to inviting you to bring it to our attention with under a bullet point, just a quick summary of what specific information, either new data or evidence-based conclusion it's being forwarded for, and how you think it's relevant to our work, and anything else you want to say about it. And we were opening the window for that on Monday, 2 days ago, and keeping the window open for those submissions till the end of next week, Friday the 8th. And then as a result of discussions among the co-chairs on our last call, we decided for a number of reasons to move back and somewhat enlarge the window for submission of individual proposals So that window opens on 30th of January, which is today, and remains open for about 3 weeks for folks who want to submit individual proposals. And those are the major updates, and for the sake of brevity, I'll stop there and see if there are any questions. Thank you.
Thanks, Bill. It's David McCauley speaking for the record. I see that George has a hand up. Before we go to George, I just want to mention to staff that when we get into the documents, I'm going to be toggling between the Adobe and the Google Docs because I'm only working on a laptop today. My monitor is on the Fritz, and so I may ask for help on watching the chat. George, you are first in the queue. Why don't you go ahead?
Yeah, George requested the transcript. I raised this point in the in the other subteam call that you know we're given basically less than 2 weeks, 9 days from now, to submit work that really was assigned to the ICANN staff before Christmas, and then they come back to us on January 9th saying that it's a huge task for which a significant amount of working group time would be needed. And now, you're saying it's going to be crowdsourced, but really it's only, a small number of people that are going to go through and try to collect that data and submit it in the format that the co-chairs have decided upon. This all goes to workload. It's just not enough time to do a proper job. You don't want to have the data. That you should just be clear to say that there's, we're going to have 9 days to do it. And it's just really not sufficient. Thank you.
Whoops, I'm sorry, I was talking to a muted phone. Mary's hand is up, and so I'm going to go to Mary. Thank you, George, for your comments. Mary, you are next in the queue, so why don't you go ahead.
Thank you, David, and thanks, George, for the comments. And again, I apologize for taking time on a call when the team doesn't have very much time, but George and I did engage on this a little bit in the previous call as well. So, just for purposes of the record, and to remind everyone and echo what Phil said, by crowdsourcing, it is not the intention to have working group members do what was originally asked of staff. Staff had already been asked to go through 30-something blogs as well as do a general search for news articles on specific topics that have been identified by the group early on. What is happening now is that given the work that has been done by the working group between the time of the original data suggestions and now, and in particular, given the surveys that were done by the analysis group, working group members are being asked to leverage on their expertise and their knowledge such that if there is additional information or data out there that we don't already have, to please submit it at this point. So it is a very, very different task. And thank you, David, for allowing me to speak on this because staff does believe it's quite important to set the record straight, and it certainly is not staff trying to ask the working group members to do work that staff had originally been asked to do, as some of that is likely superseded by this point. Thank you.
Thank you, Mary. I don't see any other hands in the queue, and so we can move on to the charter questions. And the let me mention that as we get on to this, you did see, and I'm sorry that we're not having apologies were sent by Christine Durain and Susan Payne, two of our stalwart members, and I'm sorry they're not in the call, but understand the scheduling problems. But you probably saw this week that we changed things up for the call a little bit, and there was some concern expressed about it. But as I saw, and I think George made a fair point in an email this week about the level of the homework assignment, and Christine followed up with a comment and a suggestion, and the suggestion was basically that we pick two data sources. I think the suggestion from her or from someone else was that they be analysis group and the INTA data, and try and review all of the charter questions with that in mind, and the sub the sub-team co-chairs, Greg and I met with staff, and we decided that that was a good suggestion, and we took it up on that. But then subsequently, there was a concern noted. And so I just want to say that on this call, I intend to be somewhat generous on people commenting on the charter questions and the data sources. We have asked to look at INTA and analysis group, but if you have something else you want to say, without getting too deep into the substance of the issue, remember, we're looking for data sources that can help address these questions, all with a view towards seating people, coming up with proposals that they want to suggest that the sub-team take up as a Sunrise sub-team proposal or recommendation. All that being said, as I dive into it, I see there's one more hand now in the queue. George, I'm going to go to George, and then we'll wrap this up and get into the questions. George, go ahead, please.
Yeah, George Rickles with transcript. Yeah, just to correct what you said, Christine didn't say that we should do the INTA or the analysis group report. There were 12 documents listed on the first tab of that document with sources of data. And when I first posted about this earlier in the week, I said I'd gotten through the first four and realized that the workload was, you know, very high, miscalculated. And so I started off with the first four, which were registry operator responses, Deloitte responses, and stopped at that because, you know, I'd had enough. And Christine did the same, and I think Kathy looked at those as well. And so if you look at Kathy's response, she said, you know, the revised homework had no relation to what we were actually working on. And if you look at the actual documents that Ariel sent to the mailing list earlier today, there are no comments at all with relation to the INTA study or the analysis group report. So I don't know what documents you're looking at. You know, you might be looking at the ICANN staff prepared document, but there's no other apparent work done by any of the sub-team members with relation to the INTA work or the analysis group document. I know I didn't read it. If anybody wants to volunteer that they actually did read it, I'd like to see it because they didn't put any comments on the Google Docs. Thanks.
Thank you, George. And so if I indicated that Christine made the suggestion to go to INTA and analysis group, thank you for the correction. I can't recall, frankly, who made the suggestion, but in any event, that might have been a staff suggestion. I don't really recall. But in any event, I'd like to get into the questions and, as I said, be generous with the data source that people want to note. I did go into INTA and the trademark, the analysis group, myself, but I think that, and I went to Deloitte and some of the others as well, and unlike you, George, I found Deloitte not quite as helpful. But in any event, let's dive into the questions and start going through them. And people, if they have data sources that they think could be helpful in answering some of the Sunrise questions, please go ahead and note them. As I said, we can be generous in that score. And so now I'd like to turn to the Sunrise preamble charter question. I will toggle back just to see if there's anyone in the queue. I don't see anyone. So I'm going to go over to the document and read the question in the Sunrise preamble charter question. It's a series of six questions. A, is the Sunrise period serving its intended purpose? B, is it having unintended effects? C, is the trademark clearinghouse provider requiring appropriate forms of use? If not, how can this be corrected? And then the next three questions have the same premise question, which is, have abuses of the Sunrise period been documented by? Question D, has been documented by trademark owners. Question E, has it been documented by registrants? And the final question, have such abuse has been documented by registries and registrars? And I note, that there has been input from George, Christine, and Kathy into the table. And so that question is now on the floor. And if anyone would like to comment, make some additional notations, or comments with respect to the data and how it might be helpful to us, please go ahead now. And I will wait for a short amount of time to see if any hands come up in the queue, and I don't see any coming. So I'm going to toggle over to the next question, Sunrise Charter question one. Was there someone that wanted to speak?
Yes, David, I'm sorry.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I'm sorry. I see George's hand. Go ahead, George.
Yes, George Griffiths with transcript. I posted a couple of supplemental notes on the mailing list earlier today with regards to the proof of use issue on Deloitte and how they might be insufficient. And so those might be relevant in terms of use in commerce needs to be the bona fide use of a mark in the ordinary course of trade and not made merely to reserve a right in a mark. And so I posted that to the mailing list, and I'll perhaps revise my comments that I already submitted later. But I think that's the big question, that whether Deloitte's proof of use is sufficient, because, you know, hotel, I don't think that those were legitimate marks. They were just token use at best or de minimis use. And put to any scrutiny, I don't think they would survive that scrutiny. I'll post a link to the comment I made to the mailing list. And the same would go for those trademark applications that Michael Gleisner has been making, if people are following that news. You know, thousands of trademarks with no real proof of use or evidence of use that would survive scrutiny, but Deloitte is probably accepting them based on, you know, minimum actual proof that they're bona fide. Thank you.
Thank you, George. That's exactly the kind of comment we need that could be helpful to others. And thank you. I think you posted your emails in the chat. And so, Julie, it might be worth making a note in the meeting notes that George made that point. Because actually, as we're trying to do is gather data and pointers to tools that can help people along the way. So I will move then to Sunrise Charter question one. I'm out of the Adobe room for a moment, not out, but I'm on another screen for a moment, and I'll read through that. Sunrise Charter question one has two parts. First, should the availability of Sunrise registrations only for identical matches be reviewed? And secondly, if the matching process is expanded, how can registrant free expression and fair use rights be protected and balanced against trademark rights? Let me get back there. We have comments from George, from Kathy, and I'm going back into Adobe now. I don't see any hands. Mary, I see you have a hand up. I will give you the floor.
Thank you, David. And I just had my hand up to try to, I think, further elaborate on George's comments. But hopefully this will help the sub-team in its deliberation conclusion. The marks that Deloitte accepts into the trademark clearinghouse, and the easiest example we look at registered marks, is simply if they have been registered as a trademark in a jurisdiction. And Deloitte told us previously that they cannot and they do not engage in an analysis of whether the mark is a valid mark by, you know, the test under trademark law. So as long as the trademark's registered, that's eligible for entry into the trademark clearinghouse. And having said that, in terms of use, it may be helpful to distinguish between the types of use that we're talking about here. George is absolutely right, of course, that both for the U.S. and in many other jurisdictions, you get a trademark if you use it in the course of trade, and that is the very essence of a trademark. But it may be important to remember that for purposes of, say, you know, Sunrise claims and so forth, in the trademark clearinghouse, there was a rule that was developed subsequently in the implementation of the 2012 round that trademark owners could submit and could rely on proof of use. But my recollection is that the use that is spoken of here and the rule that proof of use actually goes to is not the same as the kind of use that would make for a valid trademark under any kind of substantive law. So hopefully making this distinction is helpful for the working group and for the sub-team. I just thought I might want to put it on the record. Thanks, David.
Thank you, Mary. And thanks to George for those points. And I imagine that we will come back to those if and when a proposal for a sub-team recommendation is made along these lines, along the proof of use lines. But these are exactly the things we need, you know, to point to areas of data that can help in that conversation to come. So I'm going to leave, not leave, but I'm going to go over and check the next document, which is Sunrise Charter Question 2. It, too, has two parts following a threshold question. The threshold question is registry pricing within the scope of the RPM Working Group or ICANN's review. And the two questions are, first, does Registry Sunrise or premium name pricing practices unfairly limit the ability of trademark owners to participate during Sunrise? And secondly, if so, how extensive is the problem? And so far in the previously collected data worksheet, we have comments from George in that respect, pointing to certain data. So I will come back over to look in the queue. I don't see any hands. If there's anyone that wishes to speak to this or add data from another source, please go ahead and speak. I don't hear anyone, so I'm going to move. Whoops, I'm sorry. Michael Karanikolas has a hand up, so I'm going to give Michael, you have the floor now.
Hi, thanks so much. Just a quick note something to think about, which is that you know, I think it's important to consider the potentiality that, you know, pricing is also a feature of the system, insofar as you know, it might incentivize the more selective use of the process, and to incentivize people to only pick domain names that they have a legitimate or a significant interest, beyond a de minimis interest in. So, you know, just a sort of a food for thought on that point. Thank you. Are you muted again?
I apologize for that. Thank you, Michael. I was muted and I was going on and on. My apologies. I don't see any additional hands in the queue. I'm going to move on to Sunrise Charter Question 3. This is one of those questions that Julie mentioned as a holdover from last week. So I don't see any data in it. Now I'm going to read the question just for record purposes to try and incentivize folks to look at data sources for whether they could be helpful in answering these three questions. One, should registry operators be required to create a mechanism that allows trademark owners to challenge the determination that a second-level name is a premium name or reserved name? Two, additionally, should registry operators be required to create a release mechanism in the event that a premium name or reserved name is challenged successfully so that trademark owner can register that name during the Sunrise period? And C, what concerns might be raised by either or both of these requirements? Coming back into Adobe to take a look, as I expect there's no hands up. So that's on the record. Please take a look at that, and we can see if there's data sources that could help. On the next question, Sunrise Charter Question 4, this too is a question that is a holdover from last week, so we'll treat similarly. It has four parts. Are registry operator reserve names practices unfairly limiting participation in Sunrise by trademark owners? Secondly, should Section 1.3.3 of Spec 1 of the Registry Agreement be modified to address these concerns? Third, should registry operators be required to publish their reserved name lists? What registry concerns would be raised by that publication, and what problems would it solve? And finally, D, should registry operators be required to provide trademark owners in the Trademark Clearinghouse notice and the opportunity to register the domain name should the registry operator release it? What registry concerns would be raised by this requirement? So coming back into Adobe, again, no questions. It's just really an exhortation to – whoops, George, hand up. You have the floor.
Yeah, George Kriegels. I just want to note that, well, I submit the comment, but, you know, we're talking really about a limited number of pieces of data from that we're trying to glean from the documents. So if you notice the mark, you know, I've tried to put anything that's even tangentially related to things. And if you look at Kathy's comments and Christine's, they're trying as well to bring forth gems that are, you know, somewhat related to the charter question. But, you know, sometimes we're really striving to to find things. And if something was blank in a prior document, it was probably because we didn't find anything, not because we ignored the questions. But that was limited to those first four documents. Thank you.
Thank you, George. So I will move on to, wrong click. Charter question 5A. This is not one that's a holdover from last week. Sunrise Charter question 5A is a question with four subparts. Does the current 30-day minimum for a Sunrise period serve its intended purpose, particularly in view of the fact that many registry operators actually ran a 60-day Sunrise period? Subquestion one, are there any unintended results? Two, does the ability of registry operators to expand their Sunrise periods create uniformity concerns that should be addressed by this working group? Three, are there any benefits observed when the Sunrise period is extended beyond 30 days? And finally, are there any disadvantages? And so I will come back into Adobe. I'm sorry about all the toggling. Looking for hands, I see Ariel, you have a hand up. Why don't you go ahead?
Thanks, David. This is Ariel from staff. So as the note staff sent this morning, there's no more comments from 5A and onward. So I'm wondering whether we should switch over to the leftover analysis group survey data analysis Google Docs, because there's no more new comments on the previously collected data analysis from 5A and onward.
Okay. I did notice that you're correctly that there are no further comments on the subsequent documents. So Ariel, if you would, could you put on the screen the document that you're talking about?
Yes, sure. Just one moment. We're going to upload the analysis groups one. That's a leftover from last call. So just give that one moment.
Okay. While you do that, others in the group have seen that what my practice has been to read the question just to have it as a matter of record. Is everyone okay with switching the way we're switching now, or would you prefer me to continue on and at least read the questions into the record? I'm really flexible on this. If anyone has an opinion, one way or the other, I'm happy to entertain it. I don't see any hands. I don't hear anyone. And so okay, so we're looking at the survey results. I'm just trying to size this correctly, so I'll take a question. So I have no concern with what Ariel's suggestion is, and I'm going to go ahead and take it up in the absence of any concern. And what we're doing here is getting back to looking at survey results. Same exercise we've been doing. Do the survey results help? Just as we've been looking whether previously collected data helps. First up is these are some of the holdovers. So Sunrise question three. I think I've already read it, but I will just quickly review it. Should registry operators be required to create a mechanism that allows trademark owners to challenge the determination that a second level name is a premium name or a reserved name? Secondly, additionally, should the registry operators be required to create a release mechanism in the event that a premium name or reserved name is challenged successfully so that the trademark owner can register the name during Sunrise period? And finally, what concerns might be raised by either or both of these requirements? And we do have comments from the survey data from George and Griffin and Maxim. And so I'm going to open a queue on this. If anyone would like to comment on Sunrise Charter question three and whether the survey data is helpful, and if so, how in answering the charter question. I don't see hands. I don't hear anyone. So Ariel, if you could, I don't have these queued in my own file. If you could go ahead and queue up the next one. I see that Kathy's now on the call. Hi, Kathy. Thank you for being here. We briefly touched on workflow earlier. We have 15 minutes left in this call, and perhaps in the last 5 minutes we will come to you, Kathy, and ask you if you have any further comments in that respect. Bill spoke to it briefly. And,
excuse me, David.
Yes.
I'm sorry. This is Ariel. Maxine has his hand up.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see it. Sorry, Maxine. Please go ahead.
Maxime Alzoba, for the record, comment on my comment. What I wanted to reflect here is that affecting ability of registry to work with the reserve lease to allow reserve lease to effectively block registrations will lead to destruction of the current mechanics on which registries implement their policies. So it seems the question seems to be quite simple. Yeah, third party hypothetically challenge reserved lease, but in reality it will lead to consequences where not registry, not ICANN will be able to control situation in terms of reserved lease from technical perspective. For example, those lists of Olympic registrations, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Maybe not Olympic registration, but for example, technologically dangerous names and, things important for work of the registry and in for geos, effectively they will not be able to cope anymore with the limit 100 names and with ineffectively implemented ALP. Because if you destroy the method they used in the last round, you have to give someone in exchange.
Thank you, Maxim. Thanks for the comment. If there are no further comments, then we can move on to the next holdover question that Ariel mentioned, which, if I'm not mistaken, will be question 4. So bear with us just one moment. I see Kathy Kleiman has a hand up. Before I go ahead and get us started on question number 4, let me turn to Kathy. You have the floor. Thanks.
Great. Thanks, and sorry to be late, everybody. I was actually going to ask Griffin a question about the data that was posted that just went down. So, Griffin, I'm going to summarize, but it's going to be a paraphrase, and tell me if I'm wrong. But when a brand owner or a trademark owner can't register during the sunrise period, it could be because it's a reserved name. Could it also be that it's on a protected marks list, like a donuts protected marks list? I mean, can there be a variety of reasons that would block a sunrise that go beyond reserved names? Thanks.
Thank you, Kathy. Griffin, you are up. Your hand's up, and you're next in the queue.
Yeah, thanks, David, and thanks for the question, Kathy. I suppose it's possible that a name could be, let's say a brand owner could be prevented from registering a name during sunrise for several reasons. One of which would be it's on the registry operator's reserved names list. I think I would have to go back and double check the specific mechanics of, say, the DPML, but I think it is possible for such a block to be in effect and effectively prevent a sunrise registration from another brand owner who doesn't, who might have an identical trademark. But some other third party has already, or maybe even that party itself, has a DPML or similar blocking service on that mark. Again, I would have to go back and double check the specific mechanics of, the DPML. HTML or the other blocking mechanisms to see if they do block during sunrise as well. I don't know off the top of my head. I think it's possible. So I hope that answers your question.
It does. Thanks.
Thanks, Griffin. Thanks, Kathy. We can move on to Sunrise Charter question 4. Whoops. I don't have it in front of me. There we go. And so Sunrise Charter question 4, this is the one that we're in four parts, and we're looking at the new comments are in green, right? Pardon me. So, our registry operator reserve names practice is unfairly limiting participation in Sunrise by trademark owners. That's the first part. Secondly, should Section 1.3.3 of Spec 1 of the registry agreement be modified to address these concerns? Next, should registry operators be required to publish their reserve names list? What registry concerns would be raised by that publication, and what problems would it solve? And finally, should registry operators be required to provide trademark owners in the TMCH notice and the opportunity to register the domain name should the registry operator release it? What registry concerns would be raised by this requirement? And the newest comments are in green, and I'm toggling down there, and you'll see them, some from the sub-team discussion. Maxim has made a comment, and if I'm not mistaken, that's it. So, any hands up? No, there's no hands up. I don't hear anyone to say anything further on this. Phil Corwin has a hand up now. Phil, go ahead.
Yeah, excuse me, Phil, for the record. I just want to raise, I don't have the answer, but maybe staff can look into this and enlighten us. It seems to me these type of questions raise two issues regarding the scope of our ability, that is, this working group's ability to change certain things in a subsequent round of the TLD. And one is what's in our bailiwick and what's in the jurisdiction of the subpro working group. We've had past discussions that there's been a recognition that in some cases pricing, we've heard anecdotal reports from trademark owners that they were interested in a Sunrise registration, but then when they saw the price, they decided not to, that they would either wait and see if they could get the domain in general availability or just monitor and use URS or UDRP or some other remedy if they thought a domain registered, that they were interested in registering in Sunrise and someone else got it later on, was being used for infringing purposes to deal with it that way. So the issue is on pricing. The overall ICANN policy is for the new TLD program is not to say anything about pricing. You have no rules, and we've seen TLDs with prices ranging from close to zero to quite high on an annual basis. And also, recognizing that pricing it's related to the exercise of the RPM, is probably more of a subpro issue and more in their ballpark. The other issue is to the extent the answer to any of these questions would suggest changing the rules. I'm not suggesting we should or shouldn't recommend anything, but the general approach in the new TLD program is, here are the rules in the applicant guidebook, and as long as you follow the rules and nothing you do is prohibited, as a registry operator, you pretty much have carte blanche for how you want to run your registry. And if people want to buy the domains under the rules you promulgate, fine. And if not, they don't register them. So the other question, so there's two questions here. What's in, do any of these questions raise issues that are more in subpro jurisdiction than our jurisdiction? And do any of them raise issues which registries in general would regard as not proper for a GNSO working group because they go to the contractual relationship between them and ICANN, that is, which wouldn't prevent anyone from GNSO generally from suggesting a contract change. It would just mean that we couldn't affect that change through a working group policy recommendation. I don't know the answer to these questions, but when we look at some of these questions, I think they're implicated. And I don't know if staff can provide any guidance now or can get back to us, but I just think we should be on have a firm idea of those demarcations before we get too deep into some of these questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Phil. We have 4 minutes left, and there's some administrative things to tie up at the end of the call. So I do note that the remaining questions that Ariel was referring to our charter, Sunrise Charter question 5B and 6. And so I would encourage folks to look at those with respect to the survey data. And then what I'm going to do is turn to Julie to sum up what we should be thinking about or looking for in the homework assignment, because I know there have been some concerns expressed. So let's talk about that briefly, and I'm going to give the floor to Julie. Julie, go ahead.
Thank you, David. And actually, I'll start a comment, but then I'll pass on to my colleague Ariel, who can give a little bit more detail. But first, I just wanted to note something that came up in the chat. So the chat room, it should be clear, and I thought we do include this note every time we send out very brief notes and action items. The notes that staff take are not meant to be a transcript. They also aren't meant to duplicate what's being said in the chat. The chat is actually captured, and it is posted to the wiki, and it is a definitive record of the chat. It doesn't really make sense for staff to duplicate what's in the chat in the notes. And in fact, the notes are really just very high level, just for some general guidance. And we instead recommend that people refer to the chat, the recording, and the transcript. But on the homework, as some of you know, the trademark claims decided that they did need more time on the homework and decided to go back to looking at the first four data source documents, but to look at them against all of the charter questions, so document by document against each charter question. And to be consistent, and it may also be helpful that we're on the same page with the two groups if there's any crossover. So that's what we're suggesting, and my colleague Ariel is noting that I think I've captured everything. As usual, when we send the homework, we'll have links to documents and also instructions as well to make it easier for you all to reference. Thank you, David.
Thank you, Julie. We are just about out of time, and thank you for what you just mentioned. Anything that we can do to sort of capture the fact that there are many people on trademark claims on this subteam too, that, you know, to sort of take advantage of that would be well done, as George mentioned in one of his emails. So we're out of time. I want to thank everybody for participating in this call, and look forward to seeing you all again next week. And that's it. I think we can stop the recording. Thanks very much, everybody.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference.